Welcome our listeners to this broadcast of Shooting from the Hip, brought to you by SimTrainer, the Dayton area's first indoor range and firearms training center. We're located at 2031 Dryden Road in Moraine, right across from DP&L. You can visit us on the web at www.sim-trainer.com, or you can give us a call at 937-293-3914. And I want to let our listeners know that we had a little bit of technical difficulty with our phone system that we didn't find out about till midweek, and it actually went back to about a week and a half ago. So I apologize for anybody who didn't get through, but AT&T took care of the problem. They found a mechanical problem in one of the junction boxes close by and got it taken care of on Thursday. So the lines are open, and you should have no problem getting through to the range at 293-3914. And I thank those of you who followed up with an email mentioning that it was difficult to get through. The phone was basically ringing one time and then wrapping right over to disconnection. It was actually disconnecting. It wasn't even going to voicemail. So thank you for your patience. And if we missed anybody, be sure to give us a call back or send us an email, and we'll be glad to take care of any of your shooting needs that might have arisen or anything you have concerns about. I also want to thank all of our loyal members and fans and friends who stopped by our tremendously successful Black Friday event. Last Friday, it was a record day in a number of different ways. It was a long, busy day, but
it was record on my feet. I'll tell you that
it was. It was a long day, but it's a testament to the willingness of people to come out and just be a part of a big event. And on a national scale, some of you may have seen the article in the USA Today, which commented that pretty amazing statistics came about: a 32% increase in the number of background checks run from the previous high. 32% higher
than
total
than
numbers than in one day in any previous day in the history. Just to give you an idea of the numbers, the numbers surged to 129,166 FBI checks done on Black Friday alone, which blew away the previous high of 97,848 set back in 2008. Also mentioned in the article, and something that people keep in mind, that even though that was only a 32% increase, there was probably an even greater increase in the actual sales of firearms, because that does not include multiple sales. When an individual has one or two, three or four guns, they only run one check, and so therefore there may have been a few more in there. But nonetheless, that's a significant increase, and lots of reasons for that. The article talks about people concerned about their safety in general, and women in particular getting more involved in the shooting sports. And we found both of those cases to be very true at SimTrainer. And whatever the reason is, we in the shooting sports very much support your support, and we want to make it as educational and as fun as we possibly can. There was a little blurb at the end of the article that I just have to comment on. They contacted somebody from the Brady Center to Prevent Gun Violence, who was skeptical about the increase, and he made a comment saying that he didn't think there was no real significance to that increase, and it was just coincidence. Well, we know that's not the case. So again, you know, their comments are just ridiculous and without any substantiation whatsoever. But the bottom line is, firearm sales are up, accessory sales are up. People are doing it for a variety of reasons, whether it's personal safety, getting involved in the shooting sports, recreational shooting, hunting, whatever the case might be. It was a great day all around. And I'd be interested to find, when you look at the total number of items sold, you know, whether it's flat screen TVs or iPods or things of that nature, I think that there was probably a very notable and significant increase shown in the firearm sales relative to all of those other products also. It looked like it was a good day all around the nation. I think they said that overall sales on Black Friday were up 16% from the previous year, which is just a tremendous increase. And people are out spending their money trying to fuel the economy, and that's a good thing. And again, we thank all of you that stopped by. We were so excited about what we did on Black Friday that we're going to have a follow-up event on Christmas Eve, December 24th. We would normally be closed on Christmas Eve, but because of last year's success on Christmas Eve and then the overwhelming support we had from people on Black Friday, we're going to stay open from 9 a.m. till 1 p.m. on Christmas Eve, and we're going to have a variety of last-minute sale opportunities for anybody that wants to pick up a last-minute gift for someone else or, more particular, maybe for themselves. I know that, you know, well, we spend a lot of the season looking for what we're going to get for other people, and we leave ourselves out, and that'll be a great opportunity. If you haven't got yourself something, stop
by. Or maybe
by.
You just need to drop a hint somewhere and say, oh, by the way, you know, here's a place that has something that might work.
Yeah, and some of the other places will be closing, and maybe they're going to be out of whatever it is that other people would want, but give us a chance and stop by, and we're going to have a we will extend our great sale on our new and used range guns. We're going to liquidate that entire inventory by the end of this year, no later than about the first or second week of next year, because the new guns are coming in. So you can take advantage of some great buys. I know that there were people looking for all sorts of different guns when they came in on Black Friday, and we had some people walk away with some great sales or great bargains on some guns. So please join us on Christmas Eve in a few weeks, and we'll update you as we go through the next few weeks. But that's one event to look forward to. If you have some last-minute shopping needs, we'll be more than glad to take care of that for you.
That'll be a big day all around, because we will have Shooting from the Hip that day as well. We'll be on from 2 to 3, which has something to do with why we're going to close at 1, since we'll be leaving there and headed on over to the studio.
Another thing I want to talk about, it's probably good that we get back on it, is firearm safety. There have been a couple incidents that I'm going to describe to you just in the last 3 weeks in Kettering that kind of prompted my my need, I felt, to talk about firearm safety. And remember that responsible gun ownership carries with it serious responsibility. And that serious responsibility means that you're going to be responsible for safely storing and keeping those guns so that people that shouldn't have them don't get them and that accidents don't occur. In two examples I'm going to tell you about, the first was an individual who had a hunting rifle. He actually had a couple of hunting rifles stored underneath his bed. He went to get those to get them ready for the next day when he was going to go hunting, and forgot all about the fact that he left a round in the chamber. And as he was pulling a shotgun out from underneath the bed, now get this, the round went off, it went out his house, and pellets from the shot struck an individual who was on a ladder in an adjacent house putting up Christmas decorations. Hit him in the leg, only one or two pellets, and it wasn't a big deal from the standpoint of medical necessity, but nonetheless could have been potentially life-threatening. So, again, negligence on the part of us gun owners. We've got to make sure our guns are secured properly in an unloaded condition if they're not going to be used for personal protection, and that people that shouldn't be getting access to them don't get access to them. And then when we go to get them, regardless of where they're at, whether they're in a safe, in a gun locker, under the bed, in the corner of the closet, we treat all firearms at all times as if they are loaded. We don't make any assumptions, regardless of whether it's our gun or someone else's gun, and we don't put our finger in the trigger, pointed in an unsafe direction, and we minimize, if not totally eliminate, the chance of those accidents happening.
One of the big things that people sometimes don't think about in the four rules of firearm safety, the fourth rule is to be aware of your target and what's beyond it. And even if you're not intending to shoot, where that gun points is your target. And what's beyond it could be, like in this case, a neighbor on a ladder on the other side of the wall, and that's a long ways, completely out of sight, easily out of mind, but you cannot afford to have any of those kinds of things be out of mind when you're handling a firearm, even in your own home.
You know, what was particularly ironic about this incident was just think about how everything had to be in line.
Oh, yeah.
He's pulling the gun out from underneath the bed. It goes off at the right angle so that it goes out his wall. And it just happens that a man is up on the ladder at that specific location on the corner of his house, and the bullet or the shot hit him in the leg. Now, his wife was holding the ladder about 2 or 3 feet below where the actual one of the pellets landed in his leg. So easily it could have struck her in the upper torso and been more significant. But nonetheless, major problem was averted. I know everybody was involved based on reading of the reports. They're terribly sorry that it occurred.
Oh, yeah.
Even the individual who got shot, he was like, hey, things happen. And he handled it, I think, under the circumstances very well and was very gracious to his neighbor. And there's nothing going to come of that from the standpoint of those two, although I believe the prosecutor was reviewing a criminal charge in that particular case, because of the significance. The second incident occurred about a week and a half ago. An individual was at a local range, not ours, and he brought three guns home, and he was cleaning them, and one of them was a semi-automatic pistol that he forgot to unload the chamber. When he went to pull the trigger to disassemble the gun went off, struck him in the leg. Luckily, it didn't hit a major artery, and he had a pretty significant injury. He was transported to the hospital, and I believe treated and released after, I don't know how long he spent, but it wasn't very long. And there again, tragedy was fortunately averted, but it could have been avoided altogether if we follow the basic rule of treating all firearms at all times as if they're loaded. And you think about your days at the range. You go to the range, you have a great time, you're shooting recreationally, you're in a competitive league, whatever the case might be, just remember that there's so many distractions in our lives. You may get a phone call, you may get a text, a friend might ask you to come to the next stall, look at his new gun, and you're just about done, you think you're done, you take the magazine out, and it's that instant when they call you away and you just forget. Well, when you go back into the stall, check, double check, and triple check before you stick that gun in the case so that you eliminate that problem. And then when you later get that gun out to clean it, check it, double check it, triple check it. I know Mark has asked me several times why. Because I say so. And I say so because it makes sense. You check it once. Maybe you were distracted while you were checking it. You check it a second time. Now, pretty clued in on what it's going. Then you check it the third time just to affirm that the second time was accurate and the gun is, in fact, empty. And then you can do what you have to do to disassemble it or do whatever you're going to do with it. But nonetheless, go through that protocol each and every time and you minimize, if not totally eliminate, the chance of an accident from occurring. Because all of those accidents just detract from the, you know, one oh darn makes, you know, kind of overshadows all the good that everybody else is doing. And I brought it up because, you know, here we are, Little Kettering, you know, 60,000 people, two incidents in 3 weeks.
You know, you know, that goes both ways. When you're, as far as checking the firearm, every time you pick it up, it doesn't matter whether you know the gun is loaded or not. Even if you assume the gun is loaded and you treat it as though it were loaded, which is the proper way to deal with it, you still check it. And if you think that gun is supposed to be loaded, it's a good idea to check it even then, because it's possible that you maybe forgot to charge the weapon and you're carrying a firearm for personal defense. You plan to use that gun if you need it. You're expecting to be able to pull it out of your holster and do what you need to do. And if that gun wasn't charged, if you haven't checked to make sure that gun is the condition you think it is, you could have a problem. So always double check and triple check to make sure you know the condition of that gun before you, at when you pick it up, every time you handle it.
You know, the main focus at Sim Trainer is responsible gun ownership. We put a lot of time into talking about firearm safety and range safety in all our classes and our private lessons, in our conversations with people here on the radio show. And I just want to issue a challenge to all gun owners to make that a priority. I know we've got, you know, you've listened to me and Mark sit up here in our little pulpit, and we talk about a lot of other issues, whether it's concealed carry, revisions to the law. All those are important. But right now, I'm going to tell you that right now, nothing's more important than firearm safety. And we have to make that a priority. And any chance we have, whether it's with ourselves, with our peers, when we take somebody to the range, when we're teaching young people, when we're teaching a class, when we're out shooting with friends, have the courage to step up and emphasize safety. Because sometimes the simple issue comes down to you just don't want to – it's unpopular to talk about safety. So let's step up and do the right thing here.
We're going to take our first break of the hour here in just a few seconds. So if you'd like to get on the show, we'll open the phones up after this break. You call the studio at 457-1290. 457-1290 is the number here into News Talk Radio. And we will get you up on the air. We've got lots of other things that we want to talk about as well. So join us right after this break. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290. And now 95.7 FM News Talk Radio, WHIO.
God bless America. This is your blood brother, Ted Nugent, and you're listening to Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and 95.7 FM News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Welcome back to the show. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip, and let's go right out to the phones and talk to Paul in Dayton, who's called in. Paul, welcome to the show.
Thank you for taking my call. I just got a question on the CASA law. I'll make sure I understand it. You're allowed deadly force anywhere you are legally, car, home, or in public?
Well, that's not exactly the way the law is written in Ohio. You can be using deadly force if it's appropriate to use deadly force. If you are at risk of grave bodily harm or death, you didn't start the situation, and you fulfilled a duty to retreat. You don't have a duty to retreat in your family car or in your home. So that is, you're automatically fulfilled, and that's the main difference there. You also don't have to prove that you were justified in using deadly force if you're in your home or a vehicle. And the difference with that is everywhere else, it's up to you to prove that it was justified. In your own home, it's up to – that's a rebuttable presumption. The prosecutor would have to prove that it was not justified.
You're In other words, you're allowed deadly force in your home and car. You don't have to prove that. But on the outside, if you have a way to retreat, then you're obligated to retreat rather than use deadly force.
If you can do so safely.
Yes.
And that's an area, quite frankly, that is a very vague and ambiguous, and there's not been any case law to establish.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, and that, for the rest of the listeners, that is the issue of retreating in public is one that's vague and ambiguous. And the bottom line there, the more important tenet is if you believe your life or someone else's life is in imminent jeopardy, you're justified in using deadly force. Situation that occurred on Kiowa Street gas station a few months back. Individual was just innocently pumping his gas, and he came under spontaneous assault. And I mean, could there reasonably been an opportunity for him to jump in his car and drive away? Maybe. But in that particular case, he chose to get in his car, grab his gun, and shoot the one subject, and then that resulted in the second assailant running away. So it's not clear-cut, and I don't want people to think that when they got somebody bearing down on them, they got to run away. There's got to be a reasonable chance for you to get away and be safe. That's the critical issue. That's why I want you to focus more on the likelihood of experiencing grave bodily harm or death. Rather than worrying about getting away, because things happen so spontaneously, you can't always predict that.
Thanks very much for calling the show. Let's go out and talk to Keith, who has a question for us. Keith, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. I'm in the market for a 1911, and I pretty much narrowed it down between a Springfield Armory TRP or a Les Bear Recon. What are your thoughts on both those pistols?
They're both top-of-the-line guns. The thing is... you know, you've got significant price differentials there. The TRP is a good gun, hard to get. I would say if money's not an issue, latch on the first one you can physically get your hands on, because they are very, very, very difficult to get a hold of. But
I've got availability on both of them. Specifically, I'm looking at the 9105, which is the railed light. Both of the Recon and the TRP that I'm looking at. Both have a light rail on the bottom. You got access to both of them, and I understand the price difference. Any thoughts on either one of them?
I would say it's going to be a good buy either way. They're both great guns, and it comes down to what you're wanting to pay. They're both superior weapons.
We need to take a break at the bottom of the hour for the news. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and now 95.7 FM News Talk Radio, WHIO.
I want to welcome our listeners back to the show. And if you'd like to get on the air today, please give us a call at 457-1290, 457-1290, and we'd be glad to hear from you and discuss any of your firearms-related needs. I want to mention to our listeners that there's a worthwhile benefit fundraiser going on this evening for a state trooper who's been diagnosed with brain cancer. This event's going to be held to raise funds for his family, which includes his wife and three children, to help them with their medical costs and possibly start developing a fund for the kids' college. This event's going to be held. It's going to be a fish fry at the AmVets Post 99, AmVets Post 99 at 1123 South Brown School Road in Vandalia. That's at the AmVets Post 99, 1123 South Brown School Road in Vandalia. It's going to be held tonight from 6 p.m. till midnight, 6 p.m. till midnight. Admission is $10. That's going to include all-you-can-eat fish and fixins. They're also going to be having the typical 50-50 drawings, Monte Carlo, silent auction, and raffles. Particularly noteworthy are the raffling off of Smith & Wesson M&P 9mm handgun, a Smith & Wesson M&P 15 rifle with the OSP logo engraved on it, a flat-screen television, gift certificates, and many other things. So if you have the opportunity, you want to go out and spend the evening for a worthwhile cause, fundraiser for a trooper with a cancer at the AmVets Post 99 at 1123 South Brown School Road in Vandalia. They'd be glad to have you there. Let's go out to the phones, Mark, and talk to Gary. Gary, are you there?
Yes, sir, I am, and thanks for taking my call. And I've been saving this question up since before football season. So, you know, I've been sitting on this question for a long time. Previous broadcast, you were mentioning the top heaviness of high point firearms. Do you recall that particular?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And as it just so happens, as I was driving home listening to your show, I had just added that very weapon to my collection, and I've not fired it. I know you weren't questioning the safety of that. And I'll tell you why I was steered towards that, because I noticed it was an Ohio company. Can I ask you just briefly what the downside of this particular weapon is?
Sure. Again, we're not in the business of down-talking manufacturers. But what we've done in the testing and evaluating of firearms, we found that there are numerous others, and you know, Smith & Wesson, M&P, the Glock series, the Springfield series, the Ruger series, they just perform remarkably better. And when you shoot those guns side by side by side with the one that you're mentioning, any of that line, the obvious superior construction of the weapon, the functioning of the weapon, the accuracy of the weapon just jumps out at you. And again, I wish to say that that was one of the top level companies, because it is here in Ohio, and we certainly would encourage people to go that direction. But I've been in the firearms business for 25 to 30 years, and you know, I think that if it was an issue of me, you know, just personally having an aversion against it, it would play out in a number of different ways. But I can honestly tell you, in 8 years of business, I've probably seen maybe three, certainly no more than five, come through my doors. And I don't know any of my friends or close associates that have one or have ever expressed an interest. And you know how gun people are. When they find when they find something that they're interested in, they go for it. And again, that's just, I don't want to badmouth them because they're an Ohio-based company, and I'm sure they're well-intentioned. I think they do a lot of other things, and they just happen to have a firearms, the company that manufactures other products, and they found a market for low-end guns. And you look at the basic price, you can pick up one of those firearms for less than $150 to $170 versus the rest of the guns that people would be considering to be top of the line, ranging in price from $425, $450 on up to $700 to $800. So again, all those factors taken together, I think, would be the best explanation. Now, if you happen to get that gun and you take it out and you shoot it and you have good results, that's an individual decision that you'll make. And I would encourage you to do that. But our opinion is just based on what the information and the practical experience we have dealing with those firearms.
Well, I asked for an honest critique, and I want to thank you very much for delivering that.
Thank you for making that call.
Thank you, sir.
Now, that's an issue that comes up quite often, not only with that manufacturer, but other manufacturers. And that's why we implemented our Try It Before You Buy It program, because instead of us sitting up there saying one over the other, I will tell you this, and with very rare exceptions, we don't get monetary or other endorsement packages from the various distributors. People will call us periodically and say, hey, do you carry this gun? Do you carry that gun? Would you be interested in carrying it? And we end up buying the gun. They don't send it to us for free. We buy the gun and we put it on our Try It Before You Buy It program so that you, the consumer, can come in and say, hey, I heard that car CW9 is a good gun, but I also like to shoot that Glock 19 because we know that's a good one. Well, we give you the option in our Try It Before You Buy It program to go ahead and try those guns side by side. And we try to keep up to date with new guns, the more popular guns. And going into the new year, there's probably 5 or 10 new ones that I'm going to add just based on what we've seen people walking through our doors carrying and having an interest in. And one I will tell you right now that I know people are going to be interested in shooting is going to be the Baby Desert Eagle. Which don't be misled. This is not the big 50 caliber Desert Eagle that people shoot. Those are certainly fun to shoot. This is something
I think we need one of those.
Have to do that just for the sake of having one. I know that several of the other locations do, and we might do that now that we're establishing a relationship with that company and that manufacturer. But the Baby Desert Eagle is a concealed carry type gun, and it's going to be a 9mm, and it's just a fine shooting gun that has a very smooth trigger. So we try to keep guns in stock that are most likely guns that we think that the consumers are going to want to use, because we have so many people that say, hey, I went over to the gun store and I looked at this gun, I looked at that gun, and I like that one. I said, well, did you shoot it? Well, no. Well, let's go out and let's see if you have the same result after you shoot it. And quite frankly, over half the time that's happened to me, they don't like the gun that they picked in the gun store. Now, that's no knock on the people in the gun store. It's just that we have the ability to take people to the next level, not only handling the firearm, but shooting the firearm, loading the firearm, going over the functional operation, letting them feel what the slide feels like to put a round into the chamber and then to make the weapon safe. And those are the things that we want people to be exposed to. Just Thursday night, we had a basic handgun class. That's a class that's a logical follow-up to somebody who's taken private lessons or first shots, and they get to come and they shoot. We put out a sampling of all of our semi-automatic guns, and we let them go stall to stall to stall for the first half of the course and fire whatever they want to fire, as many as they want to shoot. And then the second half of the course, we ask them to start focusing on the one they like the most, and then by the last half of the last box of ammo, shooting the gun that they really like so they can be certain, so that when they leave there, and the other night, 8 of the 10, I know this only because we had a discussion at the end of the class, 8 of the 10, there was no doubt, and the other two brought the gun that they had already bought, and one of them's going to try to go trade it in for one of the other ones that they had a chance to try at our range. Young lady made a good choice. She ended up buying a Glock 19, but found out that the Springfield XD felt a little bit better in her hand. She handled it a little bit better, so she's just going to take that gun back and see if she can trade it in. She recognizes that she's going to probably get a little bit less than she paid for it on the trade, but she said, hey, this was an opportunity for me to shoot it side-by-side with something else that I never even thought about. The Glock was one of the first ones they put in my hand. It felt good, so I went ahead and bought it. Good choice, good gun. But she found something that was better for her. So,
that's really the key. Better for her. It's not that the gun is better. You know, some people say, well, what's the best gun for concealed carry? My answer is whatever works best for you. And that's really true.
I will qualify that by saying that, we mentioned that we have, upper tier, middle tier, and then lower tier guns. And when you come, I'm not going to go into a lengthy discussion about that on the air, but we know the guns that are proven reliability, proven functionality, ease of operation, under various types of circumstances, and that's where we're going to steer you. There are, I'm going to guess, hundreds. It's in the hundreds of different variations of firearms on the market. We pretty much go with probably 4, 5, 6 manufacturers primarily. We'll dabble into a couple of other manufacturers if we find something that we think is going to be useful to the membership. And a prime example is this Magnum Research, which is they've kind of gone together because of economic times with Car Arms and a couple of other manufacturers. They formed a consortium of companies, but Magnum Research is the one that's put the Desert Eagle on the market. Like Mark says, we'll get the Desert Eagle 50 out there for people to have fun and have an experience shooting that kind of a gun. But more importantly, we're going to go try out that baby Desert Eagle because we think it has applicability in the concealed carry market, which is a large contingent of the people that come to our range.
And they're really nice guns. The ones that we've seen have been good performers, no problems with malfunctions. And sometimes that is a problem with some of the guns. And so we're, you know, that's just really good kind of a thing for people to try out. It's a different way to go. It's a different type of gun, feels different in the hand, still a great gun.
We had a couple of people who they said they when they came in for Black Friday, they want a gun with a safety. And I said, why do you want a gun with a safety? They said, well, because it's safer. And I try to, you know, we've talked about this many times. All guns, if you're a responsible gun owner, the guns come with two safeties before you even touch them. Number one, your head and your mind thinking about firearm safety, and number two, keeping your finger off the trigger and keeping it pointed in a safe direction until you're ready to shoot. So that being said, you don't need a gun with a safety. You need a gun that's right for you, and people need to know that there are some disadvantages to a gun with a safety, especially in a spontaneous self-defense situation where you haven't spent a whole lot of time practicing, and you all know this. And some of you listeners out here, you're guilty of this, and I'm calling you to give some thought to this. There are many of you who bought a gun, went to your class, and you haven't shot it since you went to your class 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago. You need to change that, because no matter what gun you have, if it has a safety, doesn't have a safety, low tier, middle tier, upper tier, you have to shoot it to become familiar with its functional operation so that if you ever have to use it to defend yourself, the handling of the gun is second nature. It's instinctive. You don't even have to think about it. Then all you have to do is think about the circumstances, and I will assure you, that's going to be tough enough. That's going to be trying enough on your brain.
Now, what Jeff's talking about when he says a safety is a manual external safety, something that you have to manually disengage before the gun will fire. And they do provide a means to keep the gun from going off when it's not supposed to. The problem is it'll also keep the gun from going off when it is supposed to if you don't remember every time to deal with it. Some of those that have the Beretta, for example, the Beretta has a safety decocker up on the slide. And it's not real convenient to disengage, and we recommend that you carry that gun with the safety in the fire position. If you have the safe in the safe position and the hammer is down the way it's supposed to be, but you draw that gun out and you pull the trigger and nothing's going to happen. And some of the models will actually, the hammer will actually function, but the gun won't fire. Some, the hammer is completely disengaged and pulling the trigger won't even allow that to occur. That's the kill me switch. If you pull that thing and you expect the gun to go off and it doesn't, that's a life and death situation that you will be on the wrong side of. We're going to take our last break for the hour. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip. Give us a call at 457-1290 if you'd like to be on the show. We will be back in just a few minutes on AM 1290 and now 95.7 FM News Talk Radio, WHIO.
God bless America. This is your blood brother, Ted Nugent, and you're listening to Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and 95.7 FM News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Welcome back to the show. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip. Let's go right back out to the phones and talk to John in Troy, who's calling in. Welcome to the show, John.
Well, howdy. I was just at a quick question regarding like the quality of Russian firearms, like foreign, like Berza 380 or maybe a Hungarian or Polish Makarov versus American weapons. I just wanted to kind of get your take on that.
Well, it'd be very similar to the explanation I had earlier, referenced the High Point. There are numerous other choices that we would make above those choices you mentioned, whether it's the Makarov, the Bursa, or any other foreign. They're just based on proven reliability, functional operation. I will tell you that one of the guns that you mentioned, the Bursa 380, the last time that we had two people, the last two times we had people in the classes, we had multiple problems and malfunctions with a variety of different ammunitions. One of the individuals got a magazine problem that we got rectified, and it still was problematic. But again, it's going to come down to your personal choice, and I would rather you have no gun or a gun rather than no gun. But I would rather you give some thought to making a good investment and testing and evaluating the guns before you make your choice, and don't make your choice strictly on price.
Okay, well, you answered my question. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks very much for calling the show. Let's go out and talk to Thomas in Jefferson Township. Thomas, welcome to the show. Are you there?
Hello?
Hello. Welcome to the show. This is Mark and Jeff. We're Shooting from the Hip. Are you? Do we have a question that we can answer for you?
Yes. I was just listening to your show, and I had a couple comments on gun safety.
Go ahead.
Regarding black powder firearms, and as you well know, we're in the season for deer season.
Go ahead. Go ahead with your comment.
Pardon me?
Go ahead with your comment.
Yes. In regards to black powder pistols, if a gun is loaded with a charge and the brass nipple is not loaded, but a child could pick up, you can buy these cap gun.
Okay.
Things that when I was a child, I'm 50 some years old, but you could put these little cap gun charges in a cap gun and fire off, and that could send off a load. And a lot of people that I know that they have black powder pistols and they leave them charged, but they don't have the charge on the nipple.
Okay,
right.
But
well,
you can actually, you know, as a child, they could, they could put one of these cap gun.
Well, regardless of what the gun is, we're just going to encourage people to exercise good, safe gun handling practices. Sorry, we have to cut you off there.
We're done for today. This is Mark and Jeff for Shooting from the Hip on WHIO.